This podcast is brought to you by Money Control.
Hello and welcome to Season 5 of Simply Safe Podcast at Money Control. I'm Kaizad Adajania. Have you ever wondered how a fund manager picks stocks that go in your mutual fund's portfolios? Yeah, I mean, they do a lot of numbers, they look at a lot of spreadsheets, annual reports, balance sheets, cash flows, but you know what? Numbers can be boring at times. What's really interesting is how they look beyond the numbers. Like when they go and meet company management, when they go and visit factories, when they study company practices, worker-employer relationships, corporate governance practices. So how do all of these things influence a fund manager's decision? What about social media? Do they also look at social media seriously, where today news breaks faster than that on a television or in a newspaper? Well, we are here to tell you secrets of some of India's top fund managers. For today's episode, I caught up with Soumendra Nath Lahiri, who at the moment is the Chief Investment Officer at L&T Mutual Fund. He's one of the most consistent fund managers in the mutual funds industry, always very frank and knowledgeable. Soumendra has lots to share on how to see the unseen and make the most of it all to become a better stock investor. And I also found him to be a great storyteller. Let's hear what he has to say. Hi, Soumendra. Welcome to my podcast. So, you know, let's start by asking you the most basic questions. I mean, you fund managers always take a look at always look at balance sheets, annual reports. I mean, I'm sure you must be having tons and tons of numbers and data on your spreadsheets at Excel. But surely, I mean, there must be more than just the balance sheets and the quantitative analysis that you guys look at before you decide to buy a stock or decide to sell a stock. So start by telling us, Soumendra, how important is it for you all to look beyond the balance sheets, beyond the cash flow statements, beyond the annual reports?
Yeah. I have been in the industry for close to 3 decades now, and I have seen how this industry has evolved. And even now, I still feel we are very much in the basic evolution stage, because we don't have fund managers who been for long periods of
through
time.
Cycles, unlike, multiple cycles.
Multiple cycles. Yeah. And if you look at how we started research way back in the 90s, was even getting a balance sheet was a challenge.
Correct.
At that point in time, we used to go to the stock exchange to get numbers too.
Correct.
Results used to be announced on the stock exchange board, and from there it used to get faxed. Fax was an important machine in those days. However, things have changed today, and in terms of the data and balance sheet numbers that you spoke about, that's very much readily available.
Okay.
And everybody pretty much gets to see the same numbers, and finally,
absolutely,
what you put to those numbers and what meaning you make out of those numbers,
correct, how you interpret those numbers is
what differentiates you from the others.
Correct.
Now, while you have these hard facts in terms of numbers which show up every quarter, what also we do is a couple of things by which you can differentiate yourself. One of the ways is, maybe you go visit companies in their offices.
Okay.
We do get to meet most companies in conferences these days. So it's not an issue or challenge to meet companies. That used to be a challenge 2 decades back. Companies rarely met people.
Okay.
They didn't know what, a market cap was, or how they created wealth by market cap.
Okay.
Today, it's no longer the case. But you still, I think, a way to meet and understand people better is to go and meet them in their own home ground. So what we do is, in every once in 6 months, all our investee companies, we plan a visit to go to their offices, and should there be a new plant that has been set up or some new technology that they have adapted at their plant, go visit their plant facilities. And like I always said, since I have got the experience of having worked in a plant for over 4 or 5 years.
You worked in a plant.
I worked in an automotive factory
on
the shop floor.
Okay.
I have managed people in shifts.
Okay.
I always saw one interesting thing. Whenever the plant started looking much cleaner than its normal look, it means that there was some visitor who was going to drop by.
Okay.
And for a fund manager who goes to visit a plant, obviously, the management would want to show
the
best side. It's like, when you go in an arranged marriage, going to meet the bride, you generally see that everything is decked up, and they always put their best foot forward.
Yeah.
It is similar here, but you get to understand the nuances, and the one thing we don't shy away from is to talk to people down the line too.
Yeah, that is what I think, wanted to ask you, that you do talk to people down the line.
Absolutely. I think that pretty much gives you...
You get access?
You get access. Okay. I think as you're moving around in groups, at some point in time, if you just detach yourself from the group to, you know, stand at a certain point in the shop floor, maybe look at people working there and see how the methods, practices that they follow there. Also, in a lot of plants, look at the kind of the process flow that they have, the workflow they have.
Okay.
You get a fair idea of, you know, how plants have got constructed over periods of time. And you will see evolution of plants too.
Okay.
In the initial days, companies were set up with, you know, plants and huge tracts of land. One gate being the entry gate and the exit gate just being next to one another. I think gone are those days. Today, you see more layouts which are... you know, productive in nature, and then, you know, material flow happens in a way which brings about increasing productivity.
Increasing,
so I think there's a lot of work and that goes behind what gets done. Also, one critical thing is if you look at the kind of uniforms that the workers wear, I think it gives you a fair idea of, you know, how the cleanliness is maintained in those plants. And I know that for a fact that, you know, most workers have certain periods of time when they put their clothes for wash, and, you know, it's all in an organized cycle that has been set up, and then that also throws up interesting propositions. All said and done, if you go today, I think people who are graduating today would like to work less and less in a plant and more in an air-conditioned environment.
Mm-hmm.
So you will not generally tend to see too many youngsters there. The average age has been moving up across plant wide. There have been an influx of youngsters who haven't graduated or, you know, are not educated up to the, you know, graduation level getting into the plants.
Mm.
By and large, you will see, you know, a slightly older generation people working in plants. And talking to them, one does get a lot of insight.
Like, do you get to know whether they are happy?
Absolutely.
Whether they're taken well care of?
So, you know, the things you see is as you enter, and especially if you've gone, you know, in plants here, you will know the affiliation of the workers to the kind of union that they subscribe to. And I worked at a time when Datta Samant used to be a big man in Pune. I worked at that point in time. So the unions then were very powerful voices of the workers.
Yeah.
It is no longer so, although, you know, you have seen big names being, you know, party voices for the workers. But that gives you a fair idea of, you know, what the working community is looking for in that place. There have been very proactive and very productive unions too today, you know, where who are trying to see how they can raise productivity and meet company goals along with getting better quality of life for workers. So I think entering a company, seeing how things are stacked up there, how people are moving around, number of people loitering around, you know, all these things actually give you some bit of a rough idea of how things are there.
How things are at the company. And do you also get to know whether they are taken well care of by the relationship between the management? Is the management really typical? Somebody was telling me, you know, they had visited an automobile factory, okay, and kind of, you know, the main gate was more than a kilometer or so from the actual plant.
Okay.
And, you know, in temperatures of 30 degrees, 40 degrees, it becomes a little, they had to walk.
For long distances.
Yeah. So it kind of tells you, you know, whether the company is really taking care of the employees or what it thinks of.
See, when you go for a company visit, maybe there are some nuances which you will not get to watch. Say, I think a good time to visit a plant is when there's a shift change.
You'll
see how things happen in terms of one set of workers going out and the new set coming in.
Okay.
Do companies organize buses to get their employees dropped off to their residences? Mm. Or do they get picked up from there? Mm. Do the employees fend for themselves?
Okay.
Depending on the size and type of company, we've generally seen the multinationals you know, being much more proactive in terms of being employer-friendly, employee-friendly in terms of, you know, providing with these kind of soft facilities, whether being dropped to the house or to the nearest railway station and stuff like that. So there are a lot of things you get to understand and see when you go to a plant. Not necessarily everything, you know, relates to the number, but there's a feel that you get, the pulse of the motivational levels among workers.
Okay.
You know, human beings by and large are lazy people, and you need to keep giving them motivation every now and then. Money is one form of motivation in terms of, you know, getting better wages. How you appreciate, you see a lot of companies where they have large boards where they have, you know, employee photos put up saying this is the employee of the
month.
You know, those are very much bigger motivational tools, and everybody aspires to come on that you know, board there. So how employees are treated makes a lot of difference. Also, one thing I should add here is, between when we used to work, or, you know, maybe when in our country got independence, there's been a shift in the overall economy, and that we have become more a services economy.
Yeah.
So from being a manufacturing economy, you can become a services economy. And in a services economy, it is just the people who compose. So if you go to any software company, and we used to do that, you know, by the dozens in way back in 98, 2000, when the technology boom happened, you would get to see a lot of companies there. You know, you see how much space they are giving per employee.
Okay.
Does he have enough place to move around?
Okay.
The kind of facilities in terms of the laptop they provided him. If somebody gets an Apple Mac, then you think that, yeah, this company is really, you know, bothered about the kind of work that the employee is doing. Also depends on the kind of value add that the employee is doing too.
Yeah.
You know, if the quality of the work is low end, then he doesn't need a Mac to do that kind of work.
So what you're saying is that if a company, even if there is no plant or even there is no factory, there are still enough qualitative inputs that you can get by visiting a services industry.
Absolutely. You go and see how the layout has been formed, how people have replacements coming through.
Okay.
What is it that they get to do when they get breaks? You know, do they keep themselves gainfully engaged in doing some play activity there?
Yeah.
There's some TT tables kept there.
Yeah.
You know, does the company provide food? Or guys will have to carry their own food. You know, all these are other things, the softer issues.
Okay.
Does the company have a crash? And I know that a lot of, you know, big banks, multinational banks, for especially for working women, you know,
this culture has caught on
in India too, where, you know, you have a crash to keep your young kids there, play school kind of a thing. So these are the aspects that also sometimes maybe influence employees also take decisions of whether to join a company or not. That is what creates a healthy environment to work, and then the productivity level.
Very interesting, Soumendra. Tell me, how much, when you go to a new company, and obviously, I mean, you must be meeting company management, you must be meeting the CEO, the CFO, the CXO level. Okay, how much do you trust them, and how much do you try and go beyond whatever they say, whatever obvious that they say? How much can be trusted with? Because you have, you know, you have large size companies, and you are a fund manager who have an equal amount of experience in mid size, small size companies, upcoming companies, as well as established companies.
Correct.
So tell me, in terms of all these three segments, how much do you trust, and how much do you take them at face value, and how much do you go beyond?
That's a very good question. And each company has its own evolution, and at various stages of evolution, you depend on certain factors, and beyond that, it is taken as given. So as a company evolves from being a small cap company where the promoter and the management more or less is similar, as it grows to becoming a mid cap company, you see there's going to be some dichotomy between the promoter, you see a management layer coming in, and then when you become a large cap company, you see more management and less promoter. Actually, there will be some cases where, you know, the involvement will be higher, but by and large, that is the track that most companies evolve through. Very early in life, one of my mentors in the investing business told me that, should you ask a barber whether you need a haircut, his answer will always be yes.
Yes.
So it is similar to, you know, meeting companies and trying to find out about numbers. Very rarely do companies say the absolute truth.
Okay. Very
rarely. There are a few exceptions.
Okay.
Yeah, maybe in my career spread over 27 years, maybe I might have met a dozen or two. And it is at different points in times and cycles, you know.
So
most businesses have a cyclical tendency, you know. So sometimes people say this is a cycle, but we'll manage it. Some people say, no, this is bad. People very rarely say that I'm having a tough time. There are very few companies who actually say. But there are some people who have been genuinely good in that, that they've said that, you know. But by and large, everybody tries to make a scenario or a case for things are not looking too good now, but two quarters down the line, we should be fine.
So, a bit of this, a bit of that.
More optimism. Back-ended optimism is what people try to dish out to you, because they know that there's a potential person who could either buy into the stock and you know, the implications of an institutional investor being in the holdings list actually makes a lot of difference for a lot of smaller companies.
Okay. Beyond the company management, especially when you're doing research for a fresh company in your portfolio, which you haven't yet bought it, but which you're actively considering it, are there any other people in the ecosystem who you consult on? You know, just pick up a phone call, maybe a distributor or a business partner, to get more information? And if so, do you really get something more that maybe could help your decision?
We do a few checks for sure on any company that we invest in, beyond just talking to the investee company.
Okay.
The first thing that we do is to, if there is a competition that is available, as a competitor to the person in the same area of business, you question him, you'll obviously, no competitor would like to talk all good about
competition.
Exactly. There are very rare cases of people talking very good about competition. Exactly. I have not seen that happen, unless it is, you know, a duopoly or something, and where there's a 60-40 market between two companies. Generally, you will get to know what are the, you know, misdoings or what are the issues associated with a particular company or brand, only when you talk to competition. Beyond that, what we try to do is talk to everybody in the ecosystem of that particular company, whether it be the suppliers of raw materials at some point in time, how prices trend, how this company is in terms of making payments when they buy
like
goods.
An auto ancillary company for ancillary, an auto company.
So you get how they are at scheduling, how soon do they change their decisions, are they very finicky about quality. You get to understand a lot of things by talking to people who provide the inputs. So you talk to competition, you talk to people who provide the inputs, you talk to consumers, users, you get a feedback from, you know, how they are selling, where they are selling.
Okay.
The users of the products. You may not eat for some consumption, you'll get by the numbers, you go by the overall broad numbers of how sales are happening. Try to analyze there, where the margins are coming. So, you know, you do a host of activities beyond just meeting the company. I think the basic of investing is understanding the business.
Okay.
If you don't understand the business, you can't attach a value to it. Now, a market cap or an enterprise value of a company is a function of understanding what the business is valued at. And can it be valued at much higher given the growth prospects? Whether growth will translate into profits, all those things finally, you know, shape.
So to understand the business, obviously you have to go
that
out
is
of
the heart
office.
Of investing. That's the core of investing.
Core, and you have to step out of your office. You have to look elsewhere apart from your spreadsheets and Excel.
Absolutely.
Go and talk to managements. Go and talk to, as you said, other people connected to the management.
Absolutely.
Also.
Yeah. That's where you understand, you know, the nuances of why X company is better than Y company, and what is it that he does different, and hence his margins are better than him. Look at the longer term trends of how they have managed tough times. What have been their capital allocation policies? No, everything is there in terms of numbers, but you also have to get a feel of why do they do what they do. If somebody has made a big capex, you know, you just see the number in the annual report. But unless you talk to somebody in the company, you will not know why they did it. You talk to competition and see whether it is required.
Correct.
Whether they are taking a step in the right direction. Are they investing more money in down cycles? Are they investing more money in up cycles?
Okay.
You know, that is what gives you a rough idea of how good a management is.
Okay.
Because if you are able to tide through a tough cycle, and if you are able to make investments, then you will get the benefit over the next.
When the cycle goes up.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
So, Amir, tell me, you've been in this fund industry for 15 so many long years. In the recent years, we've seen a lot of sell-side analysts also emerge. I don't know what was the culture of sell-side analysts when you started your days in the fund management.
Yeah.
But, you know, sell-side analysts, for the sake of our readers, I'm just clarifying, these are analysts from brokerage houses who sell you their stock ideas with the point of view that you will actually buy some of those companies through them as a brokerage, and obviously you pay the brokerage cost to them, right?
Correct.
And you guys are the buy-side analysts because you analyze from the point of view of buying the script.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So, a lot of these sell-side analysts also, Soumitra, go and meet fund managers. I'm sure you would also be meeting these people dime a dozen.
Yeah.
How much do you rely on the sell side analysts, their recommendations, and do you then substantiate, then cross check their data or their information?
So what you can you use the sell side analyst is more in terms of sounding you out for an idea, because if you start baking in his numbers into your analyst numbers and then your numbers, the biases of each step will get into progressively added in the overall scheme of things. So, maybe a sell-side analyst can make a pitch on a particular story X, saying that this is a buy because of being a good company, strong brand. But the reason you may be buying that company, maybe you look at the company, you analyze it, do your work. Hmm. The sell side analyst's job is to sell a stock to us.
Correct.
Our job is to, vet it in the sense, do go through the process that we follow.
And there's also that incentive that a sell side analyst comes with, right? I mean, he wants you ultimately to buy the stock and
Absolutely.
To earn the brokerage.
Correct. The brokerage is anyway given for most panel brokers. So
yeah.
to that extent, that will anyway, if he's doing a good job over periods of time, we may not reward him with the same stock purchase. We could give him brokerage in some other stocks.
Some
so that it is just that.
But do you feel in your experience, Swaminathan, that you have to do a lot of research on your own to verify what the sell side analyst?
Yeah. So what happens is, we have in our house itself, we have a team of 6 analysts.
Yeah.
And if you look at the number of brokers who cater to, there are 80 brokers. And so if you think that there are 80 brokers and 5 analysts in each broking house, there are 400 brokers, 400 analysts who are catering to us with various information and news flows and so. Obviously, with experience and over periods of time, you realize who are the guys who've been doing their job better than the others.
Okay.
So experience counts here
counts.
Because you will know, because each report looks fancy. Mm. If you look at these days, you don't get so much of the printed variety.
Yeah, yeah.
But when we started our career, everything used to be printed, and it depends
glossy
on the quality
papers.
Glossy your paper. It depended on the quality of print, which made it look very attractive. Even some bad ideas would go through in those days, because availability of information was a challenge then.
Mm.
Today it is no longer so.
Hmm.
Today, with the click of a mouse, I can get an access to what information I want.
Hmm.
So a sell side analyst at best can at some point in time maybe throw some leads at you.
Hmm.
And where you have to get the basic understanding of the companies, maybe his report provides you with those basic facts to understand that business.
Hmm.
Then you have to rework on it and see what questions you get.
Okay. You're saying there is no substitute to hard work.
There's no substitute.
Okay. What about, you said earlier, I noticed you said there's provide you with a lot of information now. Earlier in the annual report days, the annual reports is what you had to rely on.
Yeah.
What about social media? How much of value do you all associate to social media? Because a lot of things get said on the social media.
Yeah.
Twitter is there, Facebook is there.
Yeah.
A lot of unverified information is also there. A lot of rumor mongering can happen.
Absolutely.
And a lot of first-hand information can also come, because today there are just so many people who are tracking so many companies.
It's increasingly become even more challenging and difficult in terms of seeing so many sources of information. We still rely more on the old school of information.
Well,
social media can throw up some kinds of challenges to you in terms of questioning integrity. Questioning the what the processes companies follow and stuff like that. More often than not, you should get things verified before you believe whatever props up on some of these social media, because at some point in time you'll also have to authenticate the source who is providing the information, because what is it in it for him?
Yeah,
I can easily spread a news on some other person, and the stock can go up or down based on the kind of information you put through.
True.
But I think the onus is on us finally, because we are going to make the call on whether to buy or to sell.
Mm-hmm.
And that decision has to be driven by not just rumor mongering and basis of some kind of a news which comes flashes on the social media.
True.
I think one needs to put in that bit of hard work.
Mm-hmm.
It could be that by the time you do your hard work, the stock could have gone down or gone up. But so be it. At least you are sure that you're working on information which is more definitive than just some rumors that is floating around.
And as opposed to, let's say, picking a stock, picking a large cap stock vis-a-vis, let's say, picking up a small cap stock, you would obviously have to go more deeper and deeper into the company in a small cap stock rather than large cap.
So, like you said before, which is the hard work part for the small and mid-cap stocks, is much more than the large cap stock.
Yeah.
Primarily because the amount of research that is done in the large cap area, the number of people tracking them is far higher, because brokers also track more large caps than small and mid, because that is where they can earn their brokerage commissions too.
Yeah.
So to that extent, you see the bias is more in that. And so information, whether it be information availability or whether management access, the larger caps seem to have done it all or know the process much better than the small and mid cap names.
Can you afford to put your feet up and relax when you're picking up a large cap stock. I'm saying beyond the numbers, beyond the annual reports, beyond your usual desktop research, can you afford to not kind of beat management? So not, let's say, go for a factory visit when you're investing in a large cap stock? Or these days, you with the economy being where it is, you feel that it's safe not to take any chances?
Any cap stock, I think whether you visit the plant, see, also there are complexities in plants. Now, if I take you to a very complex plant, you will not even understand in the process. So you will be going through a plant, looking smart, wearing a helmet and moving around there. But, you know, understanding of the process, what is hot, the hot metal coming and, you know, where it gets rolled. I think the understanding is pretty much limited in terms of what you gather from there. Barring seeing, you know, the hygiene factors of cleanliness and whether, you know, the workers are properly geared up and stuff like that. In the larger companies, what you can avoid is maybe doing these kind of factory visits. And where, you know, when a management makes a commitment of saying they're doing a particular plant or they have a certain process, I think then it becomes a given.
But do you still meet management?
Management. You have to do your regular hygiene checks with management.
No, for example, I don't mean to say this in a recommendatory point of view, but let's say if it's an Infosys or let's say if it's a Tata company, everybody knows them. Okay, they are always out there on TV channels and giving sound bites and all. But do you as a fund manager would still want to meet them?
At some point in time, if it suits my schedule, like today, I think Infosys is having its analyst meet in Bangalore. And there are a lot of people who would have landed up there. Only instance is now is I think the number of people fund managers landing up instead of the fund managers, you might see somebody else from my team. The analyst would have be representing the fund manager That kind of thing also happens. And in the large cap stocks, when they become index stocks, you know, then it is how you are positioned versus the benchmark, whether you're taking active bets or being away from the benchmark. In which case, you know, if Infosys has a certain weight in the benchmark, how are you positioned relative to that is what will give, you know, your call, the weightage, whether you're bullish on Infosys or you're bearish on Infosys.
Do you ever revisit your decisions, Soumendra?
Oh, yeah. Every day is a new day. And so there are new pieces of information coming in. You get to hear a whole lot of things of what competition is doing. There'll be instances of, you know, new pieces of information coming in. So everything needs to keep getting factored into the overall price. So yes, we do keep revisiting our ideas, and more so when we get it wrong. I think that is when we take back work home too sometimes, you know, in terms of thinking about where is it that, you know, what is it that I'm missing out on, or where is it that I'm getting it wrong, to try and understand, you know, how the corrective measures can be taken, whether it is to sell out of the idea or you think you could build on the position given the opportunity that the lower price is creating. That is the kind of call you need to keep taking.
Do you also take a look at your competitors' portfolios to see if, let's say, as a validation?
So, while we do look at whether other fund houses own a particular stock, but that in itself is not a yardstick for us to invest. We don't mind being the first fund house buying into a particular idea. And in a lot of cases, if you look at the breadth of investments that L&T Mutual Fund has done, we have been the first fund house in a lot of ideas.
True.
So to that extent...
And especially if you're running a small and mid-cap, you've got to be, no? Otherwise, where will your edge come from?
You're absolutely right. You're bang on there. You know, we have always been... So as long as you get the call on the business, right? As long as you've done your check on the management and the promoters, and which is a very important part in small and mid-cap thing. And if the evaluations are favorable for you, I think you get a very good combination.
Do you get a high when, let's say, you search for a company and being the first fund manager to get inside that company, and then you feel you see other 4 or 5 fund managers who also in the following months have got onto the...
Yes, for sure. Yeah, I think why not? I think it just vindicates your stance that, you know, here's a good company. And I think more often than not, when you get to hear that fund managers inquiring about what you are doing. That surely gives good stamp of approval of what we have been up to. It is not that all ideas that we buy go up or do well. This is a job you have to understand that you should get more rights than wrongs. And if you do that consistently well over periods of time, you've hit the home run.
If you look back, any feel that you've made mistakes?
We do it all the time. I think mistakes is a part of investing.
How do you deal with them? What do you do? Do you hold on to them, thinking that, okay, one day these companies might come up, or then do you take an instant decision after, let's say, some kind of an evaluation and then
take the evaluation is an ongoing process at every point in time. And where we decide whether a company should continue to be in the portfolio or not is primarily dependent on two things. One is the decision on the management and the promoter. If the management promoters are genuine, but it is an issue of the business going through a bad cycle, and if we think that things can recover back, we will continue to stay there. It is not possible always to buy into ideas at the low and sell it at the high.
Correct.
It is theoretically what we are supposed to do. At some point in time, you may not get it perfectly right at every point in time. Either you get in early and get out early, or you get in late and get out late and other things. But at some point in time, maybe you may not get the exact exit. As long as the management and promoter part of it is sound, the businesses can have some bit of volatility in terms of, you know, going through cycles. We are perfectly fine. But where, you know, you made your initial rationale in terms of either the business or the management wrong, then I think you sell lock, stock and barrel and get out of this.
Otherwise, a bad decision is a bad decision. Then you can't wish.
So that is why you have a portfolio approach to investing.
Yeah.
One stock should not be such that, you know, it brings you down in the overall scheme of things.
Correct. Okay, Soumitra, thank you so much for your lovely and insightful views. And thank you for coming on our podcast.
Yeah, thanks, Kaisar. It was a pleasure being here.
That's all we have for you today, folks. I hope you enjoyed the conversation. Over the next month and a half or so, we'll bring you many such conversations with some of our top fund managers around. If you have any feedback, anything to say, or any queries that you want to write to us, our email ID is mcpodcast@mw18.com. I repeat, it's mcpodcast@mw18.com. For more news, views, and updates, log on to moneycontrol.com.